TED Audio Collective. As many of you know, a lot of my research centers around stress and stress management. And one thing that folks are often stressed about is motivating teams to do great work, or being motivated to do great work themselves. They hit a wall, and I get it. In these cases, I often tell people that one way to get that stress off your shoulders is to consider or reconsider your priorities. So when you have those moments of why the heck can't I get anything done, I try to remind people to dig deeper into what it is they care about. This can help change your perspective on the situation, and it can also serve as important motivation. I'm Madhupa Akinola. This is TED Business. Our speaker today is organizational psychologist David Berkus. David highlights that one way to foster motivation is to think beyond the job you're doing. Instead, he has a simple but impactful solution. You should focus on the people you're impacting through your work. Then after the talk, I'll share how I keep myself motivated. But first, a quick break.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com, designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, I'm Frances Fry.
And I'm Ann Morris.
And we are the hosts of a new TED podcast called Fixable.
We've helped leaders at some of the world's most competitive companies solve all kinds of problems.
On our show, we'll pull back the curtain and give you the type of honest, unfiltered advice we usually reserve for top executives.
Maybe you have a coworker with boundary issues, or you want to know how to inspire and motivate your team.
Give us a call, and we'll help you solve the problems you're stuck on.
Find Fixable wherever you listen.
In 2014, KPMG's leadership had a problem. Accounting is boring. Apologies to any accountants in the room, but that really was the issue. The senior leadership of one of the world's premier accounting firms had been working for a while to improve morale and engagement across the nearly 30,000 employees of the firm. When they started, morale was in the tank. Only about half of employees had a favorable opinion of the firm when surveyed, which is to say about half of employees had an unfavorable opinion of the place they continued to work. They had tried to pull the standard levers, perks, pay increases, more flexibility, more opportunities to advance, but their initial gains had leveled off. And it's easy to understand why. Accounting, in particular auditing, can be a boring and thankless job. For most of the day, you're staring at documents and spreadsheets. You're sitting in a cubicle provided by a client who doesn't actually want you there and doesn't want to answer any more questions either. And so, having run out of traditional ideas, KPMG's leaders decided to do something different. They decided to put purpose at the core of their engagement effort. And what they did first was particularly bold. They told stories. They launched what they called the We Shape History campaign, a promotional campaign designed to tell the story of how KPMG had been involved in pivotal moments in world history. So they told the story of President Roosevelt's Lend-Lease Act, which sent billions of dollars in aid to the Allies during World War II, and how he tapped KPMG to manage logistics. They told the story of how KPMG accountants resolved conflicting financial claims, which laid the groundwork for the release of 52 U.S. hostages in Iran in 1981. They told the story of how KPMG certified the election of Nelson Mandela in South Africa in 1994. They told stories about how KPMG's work served a higher purpose. And they hung posters everywhere to remind everyone of those stories. It was bold, and it worked, sort of. It moved the needle a little bit. What they did next was brilliant. To understand why their next move was so brilliant, though, we need to talk about purpose. See, most of us think of an organization's purpose or mission as a bold and lofty ambition, like helping win a world war or certify a historic election. And most leaders think that to convey a purpose that truly inspires, they need a compelling answer to the question, why? As in, why do we do what we do? And this is where it gets weird, because then most leaders look to their mission statement. And even though mission is different than purpose, but like that's a totally different talk. They look at their mission statement, they work to rewrite it, to make it more compelling. They go through rounds and rounds of editing and focus group testing. And when their heavily workshopped, perfectly worded statement is complete, they send it out to employees in emails that get deleted. They print it on posters that get ignored. They put it on a page on the company website that no one visits. Because it turns out most people are less inspired by a compelling answer to why and more motivated by a clear answer to the question, who? As in, who is served by the work that we do? I mean, think about yourself. If I asked you to think of a time when you felt highly engaged and inspired at work, you probably wouldn't mention the time your boss recited the company mission statement verbatim. Instead, you'd probably think of the last time you got a thank you from a client or a coworker, the last time you felt your work was important to someone else. To explain this further, let's switch cubicles. Let's move from the cubicles of auditors at an accounting firm to the cubicles of student workers at a university donation call center. You thought accounting was boring. And maybe you got called by one of these student workers in one of these call centers. They call in the evenings. They always have a perfectly worded script. It always ends in a request for a donation. So you end up having to say, no, I don't want to donate $1,000 to the new stadium. No, I don't want to donate $500 to the new student union. No, I don't want to donate $20.05 to commemorate my graduation year. It's like some collegiate version of green eggs and ham. No, I don't want to donate in a box or with a fox. No, I don't want to donate in a house with a mouse. Kid, I don't want to donate here or there. Kid, I'm just trying to pay off my student loans. And then you can call me back about donating. Think about the person on the other end of that line. They're sitting in a windowless room. They're constantly dialing people, destined to hang up on them, yell at them, or worse. It's got to be boring. It's got to be thankless. It's got to be draining. And you can see it in the numbers. Annual turnover in these types of call center jobs exceeds 400%. You do the math on that. That means that in any given year, the entire staff quits every 3 months. In fact, when Adam Grant and a team of researchers were looking for ways to improve morale at a call center at their university, one of the first things they noticed was a sign in one student's cubicle. It read, "Doing a good job here is like wetting your pants in a dark suit." You get a warm feeling, but no one else notices. The researchers wanted them to feel noticed, obviously not for wetting themselves. They wondered if they could get the student workers to notice the difference they were making, and if that would have a positive effect on them. So they took the break time that these workers received and they used it to run an experiment. Some of the workers during one of the breaks got to meet with a student who had received scholarship funds raised by that call center. And they got to hear how receiving those funds had made a positive impact on them. They got to meet their answer to the question, who is served by the work that we do? And when the researchers followed up a month later, that little meeting had a big impact on the workers. The workers who got to meet someone who directly benefited from the work they were doing, they worked twice as hard. They made double the number of calls per hour. They spent double the number of minutes on the phone. Their weekly revenue went from an average of $400 to more than $2,000 in donations. I mean, it's impossible to overstate how big this effect is. These workers, they didn't get any additional perks or benefits. They didn't get any additional training. They certainly didn't get asked to memorize and internalize the university's mission statement. Instead, they got a 5-minute chat with someone whose life was made better by the work they were doing. The researchers argued that these workers were inspired by a sense of pro-social motivation, the desire to protect and promote the well-being of others. And that word, pro-social, that points to what's wrong with most organizations' attempts at talking purpose. When you're talking about growth or shareholder value or disruption or even sustainability, it becomes awfully hard to tell specific stories about specific people whose life is made better by the work that you're doing. But pro-social purpose is what we want from our work. And it's what powered the second step of KPMG's purpose initiative. After the promotional campaign, after the corporate propaganda of the We Shape History campaign, the leaders launched what they called the 10,000 Stories Challenge. In essence, they said to their people, "You've heard how we've made a difference in the past. Now you tell us how you're making a difference right now." They set up an online application that not only captured individual answers, but let people design their own version of the poster, like the one from the We Shape History campaign. And the answers started rolling in. Answers like, "I combat terrorism because I help banks prevent money laundering that can go toward terrorist groups." Or, "I help farmers grow because I support the farm credit system that keeps family farms in business." Or, "I restore neighborhoods because I audit community development programs that revitalize low-income communities." They wanted 10,000 stories. They got 42,000 stories. And in time, they also got massive increases in morale and engagement across the whole company. But it's important to emphasize why they got such a profound response. They got 42,000 stories because they stopped talking about purpose as a collective why and started talking about it as an individual who. They didn't give every employee a uniform answer to the question, "Why do we do what we do?" They helped each employee find a specific answer to the question, "Who is served by the work that we do?" And just like in the call center research, that switch made all the difference in the world. So what does this mean for you? Well, if you're in a leadership role, it means part of your job is to become chief storytelling officer, always ready to tell the story of the client or coworker or community member whose life is made better by the work your team does. And if you're not in a leadership role, you can still motivate yourself and other people by capturing every instance that you come across. Every time you hear about someone who's served by the work that you're doing, every thank you that you get, capture it, save it for when you or anyone else needs a powerful story about how the work that we're doing matters. Because in the end, that's what we all want from our work, isn't it? People want to do work that matters. And they want to work for leaders who tell them they matter. And the most powerful way to tell them isn't to tell them some grandiose answer to why do we do what we do. In fact, it isn't to tell them anything at all. It's to help them find the answer to the question, who? So let me ask you, do you know? Who is served by the work that you do? Thank you.
Support for TED Business comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/TED Business. That's odoo.com/TED Business. Odoo, modern management made simple.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big?
Ooh.
Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block. Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Canva.
That was David Berkus speaking at TEDx Reno. And David's point about shifting why to who, that's good stuff. So instead of asking, why do I do this? It might be more motivating to ask, who am I serving? This is really helpful for me, especially when I'm feeling overwhelmed by my teaching. I'm a tenured professor at a business school, and some weeks during the semester are both marathons and sprints. I could tell you the why behind my teaching and my work more broadly. I love research. I have job stability through tenure. I get to collaborate with a lot of wonderful people, both within my university and at others. But more interesting is the who of it all, particularly when I'm teaching. I look at my students and I think about the impact they're going to have on the world. My hope is that they're going to be inspiring, ethical, and thoughtful leaders. And for the short time I have them in my classroom, that's what we're working towards. And so when the emails have piled up and I'm buried under stacks of papers I need to read and letters of rec I have to write, I stay focused, reminding myself of who I'm working with and the kind of potential we can cultivate together. And that makes me feel a little less stressed out, or at least a lot more motivated. That's it for today. TED Business is part of the TED Audio Collective. This episode was produced by Hannah Kingsley Ma, edited by Alejandra Salazar, and fact-checked by Julia Dickerson. Special thanks to Maria Lajas, Farah DeGrunge, Corey Hajim, Daniela Balarezo, and Michelle Quint. I'm Madhupa Akinola. Talk to you again next week.